The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Jim Fuel, bringing you another weekly look at the world of non-league football. We're with a manager set to smash records this weekend as he hopes his side can do enough in front of a bumper crowd to gain promotion to Step 4. Dave McNabb has had many highs and lows in his career as a coach, and a bigger football man you'd struggle to find, but even he is looking forward to the potential of turning his phone off on Sunday and admits that has some appeal. We also return to the National South again this week. Mark White's side are adrift at the top of the top spots, but that means nothing in this division this season, with many more twists and turns to come. Dorking Wanderers have two home games and a trip to second place rivals Worthing. That's between them and the end of the season, and whatever happens, Mark White's very ready for whatever that next chapter may be. In a busy news week, John Couch helps round up this week's news and helps preview the non-league paper out this bank holiday weekend. Time then to sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. Okay then, so let's talk to another old friend of the show and a man who could see his side wrap up their title this weekend in front of, well, it's said to be a bumper crowd, maybe one of non-league's biggest this weekend, even though they're much lower down the pyramid. It's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show, welcome back to Bury FC manager, Mr. Dave McNabb. Welcome back, Dave.
Hi, Tim, you okay?
I'm very good. I'd imagine you're very, very busy, but North West Football County's league game this weekend, Bury against Burska, over 7,000 tickets sold. You've been in the job now, what, since September 2023? If you didn't know what it means to the local people before, you must do now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the sales have been incredible, really. I think they started early last week and we sort of hit really good numbers early doors, and then we broke the North West County's record almost instantaneously. And then this week, after last Saturday's results, I've just seen them just carry on sort of skyrocketing. It's just, I don't know when it's going to stop, really.
I mean, it's exciting all round. You know, from someone who's many hundreds of miles away, it's exciting. I'd imagine if this is your local club, this is a club that means so much to you, this is really exciting. It's the last game of the season. You're 3 points clear. You've got, what, a plus 78 goal difference. You've scored 127 goals already this season in the league. 112 points you'll reach if you get a win on Saturday. You'll secure the title. You get promotion to Step 4. Is there a lot of pressure that comes with that?
Yeah, it's 109. We're on 106 points at the minute, so we can go up to 109. Yeah. So I think there is a lot of pressure. Obviously, you know, the weight in terms of the expectation, the size of the club, and what it means to everyone in the community and the town is obviously massive. But the other side of it is we're used to playing on that pressure because, yes, okay, there's a bit more riding on this weekend, but every game we play, every time the players go out with a Bury shirt on, there's pressure and there's expectations. And these lads have got so comfortable and confident in terms of dealing with those pressures. So, look, we do need to shut out some of the noise. It is about a really tough game against a very good Burska side. We need to make sure we're prepped and ready for it, and we go in front of it. The only thing that matters is the game. All the stuff that comes around it and before and after it that people are really excited for, that's great from a fan's point of view and from people in the community. But from our point of view, there's a really tough game that we have to go and try and win.
Yeah, I mean, after all, you know, the original club formed 1885, two-time cup FA Cup winners. Yeah, there was the expulsion from the EFL, obviously, in 2019. And there's the Phoenix Club's new merger, the old historic ground. You've got the 3G down, starting back down the pyramid. It's a great sort of topic for Hollywood scriptwriters, but at the end of the day, it's another game of football.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and obviously the history of the club's unbelievable. To have a club playing in the Northwest Counties who've won the FA Cup two times, it is the stuff of dreams. It is really the Rovers type stuff. And obviously the fans particularly have been through an awful lot, particularly what happened in 2019. And, you know, to have a football club to come and watch at any level is a massive bonus and a massive positive for the fans. But, you know, our goal is to try and get the club back to where it sort of belongs, and taking it one step at a time. It's certainly not going to be easy to do that. So we just need to take it, like I said, one step at a time. We've got put ourselves in a fantastic position in terms of the performances so far this season. We've just got a really tough game on Saturday that we want to go and try and win and make everyone proud.
I can sense a little bit of, you know, maybe a little extra stress in your voice, but as long as I've known you, you've always been Mr. Calm. You know, you had all those promotions, Warrington Rylands, FA Vars win at Wembley. I've got a feeling, though, this is probably your biggest day in football.
Possibly. I think it's, obviously, when you're at a club the size of Bury, you know, it does mean big games are even more important. You know, if you can't thrive under that pressure, then you're in the wrong job. I think when you come to Bury, you dream of days like Saturday. I think that's always the pinnacle. Obviously, I'd rather us have a little bit of leeway, and we have, you know, a couple of games left. I'm not going to lie about that. But I think, like I said, from a personal point of view, in terms of prepping for games, that's when I feel more nervous earlier in the week, when I'm prepping and planning, and there's lots of considerations about selection, shape, all that type of good stuff that goes into it. Once we get to sort of a day before the last training session, before the match day and the match day itself, I'm normally pretty calm, because ultimately then it's my job to make sure the players are calm, and, you know, my work for that weekend's done, and it's over to the players then to go out and perform and do what they do best.
Yeah, and we always say, yeah, every learning is a benefit in the long run. You had your spells at Macclesfield, Bootle. Last season, obviously, missed out on promotion. I sense all of those have effectively been essential building blocks to build a better Dave McNabb, build a better Bury side. And a title on Saturday probably means so much more because of everything else that you've done in the past.
Absolutely, and certainly you hope that those experiences make you a better person and a better manager. Obviously, experiences in life and the things that you do outside of football also help and contribute towards them. Having a sort of a really strong family and support mechanism, friends, family at home, that almost certainly helps. But yeah, like you said, I've had some exceptional sort of experiences and some brilliant achievements. Also had some tough days and some dark days in football. I don't think anyone could ever say they've had anything different other than good and bad. So it's a game that's got... Obviously, can always throw up changes, it can always throw up surprises. And I suppose it's about being ready and prepared as you can and just go in there and try and enjoy it. I think that's the key as well. You know, if you're playing or managing or whatever it is, coaching in front of probably going to end up being close to 8,000, if not over 8,000 people, then you're doing the wrong thing. So I'm really looking forward to it now. I'm at the point where I'm excited, calm, relaxed, can't wait to get into it and hopefully put a show on.
And you're a people person. We know that from, you know, discussions we've had before about how important the people around you are, both on and off the field, in and out of football. We should probably mention the news of Nicky Adams' retirement as well. I mean, how important has an experienced player like him been in the ranks in recent weeks to keep that momentum going, to get you to this stage? You know, he's not only a leader as a player, as a man, but he's also a bit of a club legend as well.
Yeah, he is. I think the Nicky transfer, it was the right player, the right person and the right time. I think obviously he'd had a brilliant end to last season with Radcliffe. I think he'd had a bit of a few niggles and knocks at the beginning of the season, hadn't played as much football as he would have liked. Obviously, his career was coming to an end and no one thought it was going to be at the end of this season. But, you know, he's certainly sort of planning for the future. And for him to come in at the time where we had quite a young squad, quite inexperienced, and what he's added in terms of on the pitch has been brilliant. You know, he's still a fantastic footballer, and I've got no doubt that if this opportunity wouldn't have come, he could have easily played next season. But the real impact, again, you know, if you look at all the comments and I've read quite a lot from people at all varying levels of the game. Everyone says exactly the same thing. He's one of the nicest people you've ever met. He's got a heart of gold. He drives standards. He's a leader on and off the pitch. And do you know what? It's a massive mark of respect for the man. I think, you know, when you've played in the Championship, League, won so many games in the Football League, but yet people still talking to in terms of your personality and your character. I think that means just shows just how good a person he is. And he's going to be a massive, massive loss, massive miss around the place. But again, we're going to be leaning on him on Saturday for his experience, trying to help the lad get over the line.
Yeah, I'd imagine probably people say the same about you. I certainly do over the years. I mean, when that young coach first got involved in youth football for Manchester United, you took that first gaffer job at Billinge. And what were the dreams and aspirations of a young Dave McNabb with a full of head of hair and maybe a few less crow's feet?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly wasn't to be in front of 8,000 fans at Bury at the time. I certainly wasn't thinking that far ahead. I mean, look, I suppose you go into these things, don't you? And it's, you don't know if you're going to be very good at it or whether you're going to find it challenging. And obviously you get on a bit of a run. I think the Rylands sort of journey was fantastic. Sort of back-to-back promotions, the VARs, you know, that sort of set you up. And we were really lucky in terms of the people behind the scenes and the players that we had in at the time. And we sort of went from strength to strength. And then that's when you start to think, you know, how far could you go? What's the future like? And obviously, at this level of football, you've got to consider your personal circumstances, you know, your job, what you do for a living, you know, that security. Football's it's a tough business. It's great. It brings us massive highs and lows. But, you know, if that's your sort of full-time job and that's where you want to see, well, where you see your career, then you've got to take the highs and lows with that as well. It can be very tough, very challenging at times. And it just means that, obviously, that security of manager jobs in sort of football, it's not something that hangs around very long if you're not successful. So you've got to try and consider all those aspects.
Yeah. Well, when we last had you on the Non-League Football Show, you just taken on the job and we spoke about difference in resources available to you there. You've got a lovely 3G pitch, lots of people in support. Was it maybe difficult to work out how best to use all of those?
Yeah, possibly. I think, again, it's just about assessing and where you are and obviously taking all those things into account.
And, you know, could you ever, I'm hoping you're going to push up with the league with Bury, but could you ever go back to being a non-league manager where you're doing everything?
I don't know. I think, obviously, I'm really happy where I am. There's nothing I'd love more than to be here for the next sort of, you know, minimum sort of 2, 3, 4 years and see the club go back into a full-time environment. Obviously, that'll be a big decision point for me in terms of what that means for me if we can get there. But again, with football, it's very difficult to look too far ahead. Obviously, I've got my own aspirations in terms of what I'd love to achieve at this club. They're the most important things, obviously starting with Saturday. But ultimately, if you plan too far ahead, it can come back and bite you in the bum. So it's about understanding what the goals are right now. I think the only aspiration that I really want to be concentrating on is winning that game Saturday and getting over the line.
Getting over the line on Saturday. All being well, it's a celebration. If it is, Sunday, do you take the day off, hide the mobile phone for a day, or is it straight back on it?
Oh, definitely do taking the day off Sunday. Slightly rough on Sunday, I think.
Well, that's the highs and lows of management, isn't it? I look forward to seeing some pictures and watching some videos of the celebrations. Best of luck at the weekend, Dave. Always a pleasure to get you on the Non-League Football Show. Much appreciated. Speak to you soon.
Cheers. Thanks, Tim. See you soon.
So to another old friend of the show and another manager in that ruck and maul at the top of the National League. Back at the turn of the year, when they went back top of the table in the National League South, I suggested I couldn't see anybody wrestling that away from them. Hopefully, I wasn't the curse, but it hasn't been that easy. And going into this weekend and the final three games, they are fifth in the table and 4 points off the leaders. But if ever there was a man who thrives on adversity, it is my next guest. And it is always a pleasure to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, manager at Dorking Wanderers, Mr. Mark White. Welcome back, Mark. First up, how are you? Last season was stressful and then he came into this season and I can't remember a more competitive division. That blood pressure, has that been kept under control?
Yeah, do you know what? It's interesting, actually. The league is, the National League was always famous for becoming a bit of a funnel to get back out of. And when you look at the South now, another manager, actually, Luke at Bournemouth, pointed out to me that look at how many full-time clubs and hybrids now exist in the South. So I think it's become more competitive. I think we're just glad to be part of that.
We spoke with Eastbourne Borough's Adam Murray last week, and he said that some people have commented that the reason the division is so close this term is the standard isn't as great as it has once been. We both disagreed that there's some football being played this season on par with most of the top tier too. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, in honesty, I'm probably likely to agree with Adam. I think it's been a higher standard before. We've never ever finished outside of the playoffs in this division since we existed and since the league existed. So, I'm not convinced that it's a brilliant standard, but it's competitive.
And you had that disappointing draw last weekend at Bath City, but I guess that just goes to show how tight the whole league is.
Yeah, I think exactly that. I think really anyone top to bottom, especially back end of the season, you know, when the pitches go a little bit, I think it's really competitive. Anyone can beat anyone predominantly. And I think that for me, that does just show that sort of it is maybe competitively average is what I would say.
And again, no pressure, but I look at your fixtures compared to those around you, and it's in your hands. At home to Hampton on Friday, away to Worthing, currently second in the table, on Monday, and then a last weekend home game against Chesham. I'm guessing, though, you're the sort of man that just takes each game as it comes.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is, if you look at, there's probably five teams that will think if we win all of our matches, we've got a great chance of winning the league. It would be interesting. I don't remember the last time that a league went to the final day with multiple teams. Wouldn't it be interesting if it could go to the final day and up to four teams could win the division? That would be something else.
And I sense there'd always be room for another promotion on the Mark White trophy shelf. But if you achieve the 13th this season, be that automatic or via the playoffs, would this be the sweetest, even more than the first one into the top tier of non-league?
No, I mean, the next one, the 13, because we've got that copy book blighted with the relegation, I think the next one we'll celebrate will be the one to the Football League, not the return.
And you've done, what now, over 1,000 games in charge, 26 years. And I know you've told me before that if somebody came along, you thought they could do the job better, that you wouldn't be precious over the manager's job. But do you ever think it might be nice to have a day off? I didn't think I'd like it, but what, nearly 6 months since I left Hazen-Yeddin after 26 and a half years, and Saturday mornings are considerably less stressful, and I've managed some holidays during the season too. It's actually quite refreshing on the other side.
No, not for me. I'm not a holiday type of person. I mean, I love the club. I think the club's never been in a better position. We've got a new chief exec that's been hugely taking the club forward in the last 9 months, and it's never been more exciting. So it just gets me out of bed earlier, to be honest, Tim.
I think still so much to achieve for you as well, though.
No, I mean, I just get on with things, really. I'm always looking to have a bit of fun, always looking to liven things up, really. That's just me. We're not a very normal football club. We don't really do things in an ordinary fashion.
And you announced this week a new shirt sponsor, OLBG, a 5-year deal. And it's not just a sponsorship, is it? It's along the lines of all your other commercial partners. It's a proper partnership, working with the whole club. It's not just about, you know, just getting a name on the front of the shirts. It's about helping you develop the club and going forward.
No, it's a great question, Tim. I think OLBG... the partnership is significant. It's huge. It's a long-term deal. Been described as a landmark deal. We looked long and hard. You know, we've obviously got a lot of exposure online. We get a lot of people that has offered us a lot of money to be on the front of those shirts that get, I mean, last season, 400 million views across the world. But OLBG were different. They want to be part of a trajectory. They want to buddy up and get to the Football League together. And that's, you know, that is what we're in it for. It really is to break all records. And the club was really aware that although we've reached the dizzy heights of completing the whole of non-league football, right from the top to the bottom, ultimately off the field had to improve. And OLBG now were very fortunate, very excited.
And part of that profile that obviously has attracted interest from sponsors far and wide is obviously yourself raising the profile, the great profile the club's got, you know, in much part due to you. And I've got a lot of actor mates, comedians, performers, and I often say that football managers are similar folk, and you, sir, probably more than most. You thrive off the audience, and I mean this sincerely and with the best intentions, but I can't imagine Mark White ever being happy in his own company, just being alone in a room.
With more football games, the better. That's how I'm wired up.
Mark White, always a pleasure to get you on the Non-League Football Show. Appreciate you giving us time ahead of a very busy week or so for you. Best of luck at the weekend. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. So we have already reached that time of the week once again to reach on out to Non-League Paper Towers. It's a welcome back to Executive Editor at the Non-League Paper, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. It's I can feel it. I can smell it. It's the end of the season. This weekend is the weekend of unravelling, isn't it? It's Easter weekend. I mean, usually, yeah, there's two games for all of us anyway, and I know there's plenty of last home games for many clubs as well this weekend. There's a chance that some might be out as well. It just feels an extra magical weekend for non-league football this weekend.
It does, yeah, and time has just flown. It really has. I mean, one of my many jobs is to jot down the fixtures, which is a pretty arduous task at the best of times. But I've certainly noticed while doing this week and next week's fixtures that so many leagues are sort of coming to an end already, and it's just sort of dawned upon us sort of pretty suddenly that hold on a minute, once Easter's finished, that's pretty much it. And it's sort of built up to this crescendo. And next Saturday, I think we did the final fixtures for many leagues. Yeah. Certainly, it's at step five. It's this Saturday. I know playoffs are already taking place in a few leagues. And it's crept on. Up on us pretty quickly, and but still so much to be decided. Certainly at step two with the National League North and South, it's wide open in both of those divisions, and obviously at the foot of the National League as well. There's still plenty to play for, and it's kind of now or never time now, isn't it?
Well, yeah, talking about twists and turns, because we've got these games Good Friday and then Easter Monday, most of the follow-ups, there are so many twists and turns that are just going to happen this weekend. Yeah, the National League, as you say, still all to play for, both at the top but also at the bottom, because it can take an extra twist on Friday afternoon. Boston United hosting Wealdstone. You probably remember what happened a few weeks back in the reverse fixture. Those two currently hold the two spots clear of relegation. I think they're 5 points clear of the drop zone at the moment. And maybe a win secures Step One Football for another season for whoever wins that game, maybe. But I'm maybe not fully comfortable with that, I guess. Below them, we've got Dagenham this weekend. On Friday, they host the already relegated Ebbsfleet. So maybe they'll be hopeful of maybe grabbing some points and moving out of that zone. Maidenhead hosts Woking. And then you go up to the top of the table. You've got Barnet, just, 6 points clear now, four games to play. They host Eastleigh in the 5:30 p.m. kickoff. And York City have already kicked off and finished their game when the 12:30 kickoff at Gateshead. It's just like the whole day on Friday is going to be, whether you're at football or not, you're going to be looking at your phone and seeing those results coming through.
Yeah, it's going to be two massive days of football. A huge, huge weekend. It literally sort of turn on a sixpence almost, especially down the bottom there where it's just so tight. There are just so many permutations, and who would have expected Boston and Wealdstone to be the two teams outside the relegation places going into this weekend. What they've done there, both of them, are absolutely incredible. Boston in particular, I think it's 7 wins out of 9 now, and absolutely flying. And it's an irony really that they're playing Wealdstone in a game which I think you're right. I think the winner will probably keep them up, and that's an unbelievable achievement for both of those clubs, who at certain points of the season did look pretty much dead and buried, but they both come back royally, and then you throw in Maidenhead in the mix, and Maidenhead are absolute masters of avoiding a drop, aren't they? And
Alan Devonshire, he's like Houdini, isn't he? He's like
they are.
I'm looking at it on paper or on screen here, and I'm thinking, I still wouldn't write them off. You know, I'm not even writing off AFC Fylde either. I'm still not technically relegated. They've got AFC Halifax hosting them on Friday. I think they're more hopes and dreams than some realistic probability. But as you say, you know, Maidenhead. Whatever happens Friday, a little bit of breathing space. And you've got Easter Monday. You're going to provide even more spins, because down the bottom there, what have we got? We've got Dagenham travelling to Braintree, Maidenhead travelling to Wealdstone. So if Wealdstone haven't beaten Boston on Friday, they could be really pulled back into that dogfight, and it could all change.
That's right. I mean, it's time for true characters, isn't it? And dressing room spirit to battle through it. It's been a long, hard season, and to play two games in 3 days at this stage of the season is really, really tough on everyone. But it's the same. It's the same for all teams. Mm. So it's a time for really digging deep and launching that final push, and with so many. Twists and turns of games sort of involving teams down there. I really, really cannot call it. I'm not going to write Maidenhead off at all. I mean, we all know that Alan Devonshire, as we just said, is the master of this kind of situation. He'll know exactly what it takes to get out of that. I'm certainly not going to write them off as well. And then you've got Dagenham. I mean, to see Dagenham down there, the alarming slide really of 2025, but still got really, really good players, and it's in a very proud football club. They got a game that they probably would have wanted at home to Ebbsfleet, although it's albeit still not easy, but that's probably the one that they needed really at this stage of the season, just to grind something out and keep it going into the final week. If they can do that with victory on Friday, then yes, it's certainly going to make things interesting. I think maybe a game too many for them. I think they've just probably run out of steam at just the wrong time. That defeat at Woking was probably a bit of a hammer in their coffin, unfortunately. But there's still so much to play for, and to say clubs like Braintree, who probably thought they were out of it a couple of weeks ago, have now been sucked right back into it, and really anything can happen. And what a cracking Easter it's going to be for everyone involved. Hope we can get some nice weather, get some nice big crowds down to our National League clubs this weekend, or clubs at any rung of the non-league ladder.
Well, that's the advantage of Easter, isn't it?
You can
potentially take in, maybe four, certainly three games, because there'll be some clubs playing on the Saturday as well, and that's what I mean. It's a fiesta of non-league football, and when everything's unravelling in terms of promotion and relegation, but it's also unravelling as well with off the field updates. We've spoken about some slow news weeks in recent weeks, but it's not been one of those. In the Southern League Division 1 South last weekend, we saw Shaftesbury rack up a massive 7-0 home win over relegation rivals Helston Athletic, and then they put out a statement saying that they've been notified that they're due to be relegated on ground grading, despite there's been fairly relatively new ground with a 3G pitch. But they have announced they are going to set to appeal, so I'm sure there's going to be more to come from that one, and probably other clubs as well, I fear. Brought to mind that the deadline for ground grading is the 31st of March. I'm just wondering whether that's too close to the end of the season. We're talking about, you know, how fast the end of the season's come, but the 31st of March, it sort of it then disrupts all the relegation stuff, doesn't it? Should it be the end of the year, you know, 31st of December? Because announcements or not, there's going to be potentially significant impacts in the handful of games that are going to be played in April. And we might not even know until May, you know, how things are going to shake up, who's going to be automatically relegated, who's going to be reprieved, and how it's all going to shake up. And it really does, it sort of jams everything to the end of the season. I'm not sure whether a change in that ground grading would be for the better, because it gives the clubs less time to get things ready. But I just wonder, for the benefit of football, it just makes it a little bit smoother.
Yeah, it's something I've often wondered, actually. I just feel that there were too many stories at this stage of the season, too much uncertainty, and you know, the clubs who are running purely voluntarily, doing all they can to keep their club playing at the highest level they possibly can, and I just feel it's done a little bit too late. And obviously, that then causes problems in the summer. We talk about the AGM Cup, don't we? And that's the battle that goes on after the season between clubs, looking at who can possibly fail ground grading or go up with reprieves or whatever, and you know, there's so many different sort of permutations, and every summer is absolutely sort of riddled with these ifs, buts, and maybes, and I just feel maybe with a little bit more clarity, you know, that a bit earlier on in the season, it may alleviate that a little bit. I mean, and you have to look at the problems we had with Gateshead last year. Thankfully, Gateshead managed to sort that out. But you know, now there's a question mark over Halifax, and you know, and it's the same. It's the same right the way through the pyramid. And it's something that we've said for many years that it's many, and maybe these needs to be looked at. I don't know. Maybe they're giving the clubs as much time as they possibly can to try and put things right, which is admirable. Mm. A little bit frustrating, if not from a journalist's point of view. Obviously, it gives us something to write over the summer, something a little bit juicy. But we don't like writing stuff about clubs having to take voluntary relegation, and Shaftesbury, especially on the back of a 7-0 win, and not good news for their fans, I'm afraid. But hopefully they can sort themselves out, and that hopefully the AGM Cup won't be quite as hectic and riddled with bad news as it usually is.
Yeah, we did have one entry into that AGM Cup this week. Busy season. Northern County East Football League confirming this week that Shelley FC have informed them of their intention to resign from the FA's National League system. So I don't know whether that means they won't complete the season, because that may play into the hands of the rules and how the AGM follows through, or whether they'll see it out and then it be disappeared from the NLS. I'm not sure. No other statement's been made by either by the league or club on that front. So we'll wait to see what happens there. Obviously, always, there's always unrest, isn't there? Always unrest. You can never keep everybody happy. I know that. Having been involved in the club myself. More unrest, though, among the fans at Dagenham and Redbridge this week. They're in the bottom four in the National League, we've already said. Probably need snookers, I'd suggest, to get out of that, but who knows. This week, controversial social media influencers Salma Mashour and Marwan Sari have joined the board of Dagenham and Redbridge as directors and co-investors of the club. But that's led to a petition on change change.org by fans asking for them to be removed because of comments that they've made in the past on social media and their views on various political type things, I guess. I don't want to get involved in all those sort of arguments and that, but I always make the point that actually we never actually really know the owners of any club because we're all too focused on the football.
Yeah, it's messy situation down at Dagenham. I think I have to give the fans credit really for standing by their standing by their actions. Obviously, they're not very happy at the moment with the way that the club's going on the field, and probably they could argue that it coincides with what's going on. And off the field as well. Dagenham have obviously tried to do something positive by bringing this guy involved, but look at it, that their due diligence hasn't been quite so quite as thorough as it might be. But fair play to the club as well; they listen to their fans, and I think that's I think that's very commendable. It's a situation that they obviously want sorting out. I think they had a fans forum, didn't they, on Wednesday, and there wasn't a great deal publicised about that, but fans were certainly rubbing their hands and looking forward to a bit of a meaty night, I think. So I'm assuming that wasn't the quietest of evenings, but I mean, fair play to the club for at least putting themselves out there and trying to introduce something a little bit different, and to try and appease fans a little bit. Unfortunately, I think he was the right person at the right time, should we say? And I think at this stage of the season, the only way that fans are going to be appeased and the club can press a reset button is if they stay in the division and 5 points adrift at the of the drop zone. It's going to be very, very difficult. It's going to be really weird seeing Dagenham and Redbridge playing in a National League South. But I think whatever happens on the field, there's a lot to be sorted out behind the scenes at that football club, and I just hope that they can, because they're very, very, very proud, very, very historic club, big passionate fan base, and they shouldn't really be in this position. A club like Dagenham, I don't think.
Yeah, but I think it's important that these debates are had, as you say. Fair play to the fans for getting involved and making a stand, because I don't think, we try our best on this show, and you try in the paper to get fans to understand how difficult it is to run a football club and how expensive it is. I've just seen some discussions this week on one of the message boards about the cost of repairs to a pitch within a stadium, and people saying, I didn't realise it was that expensive. I would imagine that most non-league clubs, if they want to be taking care, good care of their grass pitches, they're probably spending 20 to 40, maybe 50,000 every summer to make sure that pitch can be played on next season, with reseeding, all the pitch maintenance stuff that needs to be done. And similarly with 3G pitches as well. They're not... they still need to be looked after. They still need to be brushed. They still need to have the rubber granules or whatever other infill they've got that needs to be replaced and that sort of thing. I think it's important that these debates are had, that clubs are in financial straits, and I know people are throwing about players' wages and other costs and where clubs have been wasteful in the past and that sort of thing. But it's not a cheap toy. And as you mentioned earlier, there's clubs that are running that still on volunteers, and everybody has a capacity of what they can do, and sometimes they're going to drop the ball.
That's right, yeah. And again, it's something we see every year, with points deductions or whatever. And whenever you see something like that, your heart does go to usually volunteers who work night and day to keep the club running. And lots of sympathy for those people, and do owners as well. I mean, I've no reason to suspect that the Dagenham owners weren't acting in anything other than a genuinely positive move to try and improve the situation down at Dagenham. Maybe it was just the wrong guy at the wrong time, and the due diligence probably wasn't as thorough as it could have been. Maybe it was tinged with a little bit of desperation, given where the club is at the moment. But yeah, full sympathy, and some of the comments on social media, I think you do have to take with a pinch of salt. It's a pretty murky world, social media, especially when things are going against you like they are at Dagenham at the moment. I noticed when they announced that the move to bring in the investor was no longer taking place, they turned their comments off, and I think that's probably the right thing to do, to be honest. But at least they've been honest with the fans. At least they've been up front. They've listened to the supporters, and they've acted on it. And I think that's very, very commendable. And my heart basically goes out to any club in that situation, because you're right, it's tough, really, really tough, especially at that level where non-league football. It's not really non-league football anymore. You talk about a professional game, and there's some big clubs in the National League. It's a big clubs coming up into the National League for next season as well. Big clubs coming down. It's getting bigger every single year, and it's getting harder to compete every year. And sometimes things don't quite come off as is the situation at Dagenham. But I just feel for everyone concerned, and let's have a little bit of sympathy maybe for those who are trying their best to put things right.
Yeah, and of course, as you say, they're in a difficult position in the league as well. So that always takes some of your resources, some of your it drains your energy. And the trying to build off the field as well. Similarly, though, if you're at the top of the table, and you're looking for promotion and had a great season, it can drain your energy as well. Because at the end of this week, we've seen the announcement that Real Bedford and the Bedford Town merger now won't be completed in time for the new season. The end of April deadline set by the FA, too soon to conclude matters. So both clubs will finish this season and start next season as individual entities. It may even mean that the deal is off, according to rumours within both clubs. However, it could also mean potentially both clubs can be in the same division with ours, title win in the Step 4 Southern Central Division 1. So that might be a positive. They might both be playing in Step 3 in the same division next year. If not, Town may well secure their own promotion this weekend or next from the Southern Central Premier into Step 2. And then that also creates its own problems, because the football purist in me fears that how it's going to impact on the integrity of the competition. If this merger is still going to go ahead, and again, there's a lot of uncertainty around that, the two clubs start a new season in which they're set to merge at the end of it. If they start in the same division, how competitive are they going to be? What happens when they face each other? How does it work with the owners having interest effectively in more than one club? Because it's like, it is a simple game, football, but sometimes we just overcomplicate it.
Yeah, I'm absolutely fascinated by this this Bedford story. I spoke to Peter McCormack this week. We got a big piece going in this week's non-league paper about him. Initially, it was really about the third straight promotion from Step 6 to Step 3, and he was telling me all about the American investors, the twins who come down. The Winklevoss twins come down for their game at the weekend, and some of the stuff they were telling me. He was saying that, like, his first meeting with them, they sat down in Austin in Texas, and Tyler Winklevoss basically said to him, "What does it take to get a team in the Premier League?" And Peter McCormack's reaction was, "Well, this not run before we can walk. We're at Step 6. We're watched by 40 people. Let's take a step out of time. Maybe look at a longer term football league." He said, "No, I'm not interested in football league. I want Premier League." And that's what they're genuinely gearing towards. And I was up there asking. We were talking about the about the Universal theme park, which is coming just around the corner, and you know, boof, exciting times for the club, and yeah, it was just a fascinating story. And then obviously then it come out afterwards, so, but because he didn't want to talk too much about the merger, and I understand why now, because the announcement come not long afterwards that it wasn't taking place, and yeah, it kind of moves the cue ball a little bit, and but either way, I think Real Bedford will be positioned at step three next year, and rightly so. It'd be interesting to see if Bedford Town do go up, but I think there's an issue. If they don't, then that could be quite interesting.
I've had many conversations with Pete McCormack, and he's a wily old fella, and the scenario of Town gaining promotion also alerts me to the fact that maybe the missed deadline isn't just pure coincidence. You know, my understanding, having indirectly been involved in the rule changing for this, is that upon merger, the new club has to take the status of the lowest ranked club pre-merger. So if Town were to get promoted to step two but merged, they would then be prevented from taking that promotion due to the merger, and the newly merged club would have to play at the lowest ranked level, probably step three to where Real have been promoted. So maybe, and it might be just me being a bit too cynical, that, you know, I understand rules are rules, but sometimes they frustrate you. So sometimes you can also use them to your advantage. So maybe merging before the end of the season wouldn't be in the best interests of both clubs or a newly merged club.
Yeah, quite possibly. That's a decent assumption to make, I think. I think timing is obviously and it's also sort of quite interesting that it's gone very, very quiet on it. I mean, this first come out in January, didn't it? Mm. And then nothing at all then for 3 months, and in all of a sudden deadline over, not happening anymore. I'd be surprised if it doesn't happen. I think down the line,
with that Universal theme park going into Bedford.
Yeah,
I mean, I remember when Hayes and Yeti merged. I think my press release said about a super, some sort of, you know, superior body type club being formed. But if Universal theme park's going into Bedford, you've got Luton Airport just up the road. You've got the M1. You've got then a club with this, you know, the facilities and the resources available to them. That really would be a force in non-league.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Peter was telling me that Bedford is actually the second largest town in the UK, in England, which has never had a football league club. That's behind Wakefield, and Wakefield are obviously a massive rugby league history. So yeah, it's their time. I think there's certainly the structure there. There's certainly the population there. I think this new theme park is going to bring in 28,000 jobs and add £50 billion to the local revenue. It's the opportunity's there, and Peter's well aware of that. He's a very, very, very ambitious guy. He was very impressive. He come across so well, and these are very very intelligent people. Very switched on people, and they're obviously very, 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 very tuned in to their ambitions. As I say, they got I think the aim was 6 titles in 10 years to get them into the Football League. They've already done 3 and 3, so can they get another 3 and 7? That's the aim. That's how they've broken it down, and they're very confident that they can do it. And whether that involves Bedford Town or not, they're going to strive for that ambition, which I think is so applaudable and really, really exciting for the people of Bedford, who have already seen sort of Luton Town playing in the Premier League. They've got that excitement, that pit between their teeth. I think it could really happen, and obviously it's a long, long way to go. It's a huge, huge challenge, but they've got themselves a a really, really good ground in there. And yeah, if they can get the merger sorted, the new Erie is an excellent platform to build on for already a really, really good fan base. If they can take that between the two of them into a 2,000 plus environment, all of a sudden you've got a big non-league club there. And really, really exciting times for the whole town.
Yeah, and that's what fans need, isn't it? We've spoken about this week in, week out. They want a bit of excitement, a bit of ambition. And we spoke about that great trophy final coming up. And tickets went on sale for the non-league finals day this week. Aldershot sold out their initial allocation of 10,000 tickets in around 1.5 hours. They've got an extra tier now being opened up, plenty of tickets still available. But I think it just goes to prove what you were saying about how exciting Aldershot's fans will be to get to Wembley. But also, everybody to get to watch this year's FA Vars and FA Trophy finals on Sunday the 11th of May.
Yeah, those Shot fans are absolutely jumping a little bit. I know quite a few. I think they're up to 14,000 now, which is unbelievable. I mean, but it doesn't surprise me at all. They've always had that in them. I remember when we went to watch them at West Brom in the FA Cup. They packed that in up with 5,000, and that was a trip to the Midlands, and that was really impressive as well. Not quite sure why their home crowd average is not a little bit higher, but there's certainly scope there. Certainly, with it being a military town, with the army connections as well, people who may not be stationed in the area anymore, but still have an affinity with the club. I'm sure that's probably part of it as well. But wow, I mean, what an occasion! It's a fairy tale, really. You know, waiting 99 years for something to happen, and you know, fans in tears with the belief and the excitement, really, of the fact that they're actually going to go to Wembley, go and see their team at Wembley. And but it's not just about them, obviously. You know, there's Spennymoor Town as well. I think they've sold 2,500, which, bearing in mind that they've got a long way to come. Yeah. Spennymoor, that's a real excellent achievement for them, no doubt. No doubt that figure will go up, and then of course there's the Vars guys, two really, really ambitious clubs, going to Wembley again for the first time, AFC Whitelief and Whitstable Town. Those numbers are going up, and I mean, even if you don't support those four clubs, I would urge you, if you really want a festival of football and a real day out, then get yourself a ticket down to Wembley. Two massive games of football back to back. It's a really, really great day, and if the sun's shining on Wembley, it really is a day to remember. And even if you're just a football fan in general, then it's a cracking day out, and well worth watching.
We should whistle through some of the managerial merry-go-round, because on Easter it gets an extra boost, doesn't it? It happens every year around this time. Grantham Town, Nathan Arnold departs, Nick Davis leaves Hythe Town, and at Kirby Muxlow, they've missed out on the playoffs, so that sees the departure of Nick Green. Workington, it's over for Mark Fell, despite the club sitting above the relegation, still 3 games to go, so still might not be going down, but Mark Fell has. At Liversedge, Ryan Toulson, he's been sacked with the club confirmed in the relegation spots last weekend, but as ever, there's an additional twist, because whilst Liversedge and Sherwood Colliery were confirmed as relegated from the NPL East last weekend, this week Brickhouse Town were deducted 3 points, which potentially means if Liversedge or Sherwood Colliery win their 3 remaining games, and Heaton Stannington, who are now 1 place above the drop zone, don't pick up a point in theirs, then that club could be saved. Or probably, maybe more likely, and I don't want to wish ill on any club, but if Liversedge or Sherwood don't win this weekend, or Heaton pick up a point, those two clubs could effectively be relegated twice in a week.
Really, that's putting the knife in, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's that again, another busy time of year for managers, ins and outs, really. we've already seen it in the last sort of couple of weeks where sort of if teams' fates are sealed or otherwise, it's a good time to do it, I think. But yeah, there seems to have been a lot over the last few weeks. Yeah. Disappointing for Mark Fell. Done an excellent job there. Wilkinson, but it's really tough, isn't it? Especially, two relegations in a week. That's a little bit bit tough to take that one.
Yeah, well, it is that. I started out saying it's a weird week because other management changes. Western League Division 1, Aiki Bocco, the four management staff and the secretary have all left the club with immediate effect, according to a statement from the chairman. And then at Basildon United, Dan Spinks is the latest managerial departure. I think they've already had four bosses there this season. And I was counting up, and I think the club are now looking for their 20th manager since the start of the 2017 season. I mean, if you get the
non-league football.
You get the car park spot that says manager there. You don't think it's a permanent spot, do you? I mean, we have got some good news as well. A few more to mention. Good to see Jerry Gill back in the dugout after his recent departure from Bath City. He's the new assistant to Matt Taylor at Solihull Moors. Had invaluable experience. As will Neil Young to the next manager at Marine, because the club announced this week that Young will exit the dugout at the end of the season and take up the club's first appointment as a director of football. Another man leaving the fold, though, leaving the stock fold, indeed, at the end of the season. Paul Donnelly, he secured another season of Step 4 football for Stockfold and Southern Division 1 Central, but he won't be the one to lead them into it. And some good news for Tom Rothery. He stepped up and took the reins at Needham Market in February when Kevin Horlock left to join Maldon. And despite relegation being confirmed from National North, Tom's been handed a two-year contract. And then just before we spoke, John, I don't know if you saw this. It's a great headline. Tim O'Shea in at Cray. That Cray Wanderers going for another Spurs connection with the former Spurs player Tim O'Shea coming in as the manager there. I'm sure there'll be plenty more to report to try and squeeze it into the newspaper. We also, we should mention as well, Mark Ives stepping down as general manager at the National League. I think that for more personal reasons, a man that I've known for 25 years involvement with the FA prior to that, and despite what some fans may think of him for some of the decisions that have come from the National League, a very strong non-league man, football man, who does care about non-league, and he will be a loss to the world of non-league. And I guess before I let you go, we should also mention the National Game Awards coming up in May. People can get involved and vote via email.
Yes, please do. Yeah, we're always asked off your votes. It's getting closer now. We're on May the 14th. At AFC Wimbledon is our NGA's ceremony. So now's a really, really good time to get your votes in. Player of the year, manager of the year, team of the year, goalkeeper of the year. There's award sections covering every aspect of the game. This year we've got a brand new award for Digital Media Award, which is something we haven't done before. It's just sort of moving the NGAs forward these days, and there's so many good funny sort of social media quips with your team. If your team score a goal or concede a goal or have a man sent off, some of the media teams are really very clever in what they do, and they. We follow it throughout, and we're stuck in the office on a Saturday afternoon. So yeah, we're pretty switched on with the social media teams, who do a really, really good job in keeping fans informed of their teams positive or negative afternoons on the pitch. And yeah, we wanted to reward them as well. So brand new reward. So anyone that you think whose digital media team deserve a big pat on the back and a nice big glass decanter, with some lemonade in it, then please let us know, because we'd love to give him that recognition.
You're supposed to put lemonade in it, are you? Oh.
Apparently.
Now, I guess like me, you love Easter Weekend, but I mean, this one's going to have more twists and turns than a Harlan Coben novel, isn't it? It's probably hard to predict what's going to be in your pages this weekend, but anything you want to flag up now in this weekend's non-league paper?
Yeah, I mean, we're all about the matches this weekend. There's so many going, so many big things going on. The National League South is huge this weekend, so we're going to have a look at the big matches taking place there, and then obviously having a look at the promotion. The promotion battles really in both the North and the South, which are really hotting up, and also sort of honouring really our champions. Obviously, especially at steps 4, 5, and 6, there's champions all the time now, whether they're in action or not. So we've covered quite a few teams who have achieved their goal this year. I think Egham Town's one we've got Sidmouth Town, Atherton, Laburnum Rovers, Harper University, Lichfield City, we've talked to Cleethorpes. So there's plenty in there, lots of happy vibes of teams going up. It's that time of year that we love reporting on, but it really mainly about the games this week. That's the big talking point. That's what everyone love to see. So the paper's out as normal on Easter Monday, so grab yourself a copy. Could be a really important one.
Well, thanks as ever, John. Have a great weekend. Look forward to reading all about it in the non-league paper, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you, and you too.
And that then is it for this week. Before I go, I must make mention of a recent guest on the non-league show. You may remember a very intriguing interview with Darren Queeley, who has a record for finding those rough diamonds in non-league. And he'd taken on the role as the gaffer at the only club in the top 6 years of non-league at the time without a win. Well, Meridian VP finally secured their first league win of the season last weekend, beating Staplehurst Monarchs 2-1. Congratulations to all involved. As ever, you can get involved on social media at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L, and you can find us every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Castbox, iHeart, GS7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregations sites, and some others too. Stay safe, enjoy your weekend fiesta of football. Thank you and goodbye.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.